Welcome to the Psych Experience.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Psych Experience, the podcast for those who love psychology and psychiatry. Dr. Nadi, buddy, I'm so sorry. I'm going to touch base again on a subject that always makes you mad.
After less, I'll keep my mouth shut then.
No, for real now. The question is pretty straightforward, all right? What is deprescribing?
Deprescribing is this, compared to the history of psychiatry, is a fairly new term or concept that involves reducing the number of medications prescribed to a given patient, mostly when the risk of the given medication seems to outweigh the benefits.
Do we need a term for that? Isn't that sort of obvious or expected from a provider?
We would expect it to be the case, but the reality of things is a little bit more complicated than that.
Is it really?
Yeah, so we could start asking ourselves first, do we understand this thing? Why are there articles published on deprescribing? Why someone would take the time to state, the obvious and make a case of it? So if it happened, and it does, people are writing these things in journals and stuff, it's because there's some excess being perceived. Mm-hmm. And I have here, benzodiazepines, my favorite medications of all time. Not. So let's see what they find. So it shows that 34 out of 100 patients seen doctors during the time of the research were prescribed benzodiazepines. Now, for folks above 65 years old, it's 51%.
What?
Yeah, and benzos, you saw me talking about that. Benzodiazepines above 65 years old are like really? Really going there? So so we know that, there are virtually no indications for chronic use of benzos in the world of psychiatry, virtually. And we spoke about how damaging it usually is. But, that doesn't mean that is a problem of too much stuff yet. Now, the next graphic show the simultaneous... Okay, here. The simultaneous use of benzodiazepines and opioids, which is also a big no-no because it has proven increase in mortality by overdose, right? Increases the mortality of opioid overdose when you put them together. So let me find it here. All right, so 10 out of 100, so 10% of patients on opioids are also prescribed benzodiazepines. And 16% above 65. Now we're talking about too much or too much of bad stuff in the wrong place. Obviously, most of those cases are a continuation of therapy.
Right.
As getting off benzos is very difficult. So there's a proportion of about, let me just scroll here, 8 to 2, meaning each 8 patients being prescribed benzos during office visits today, 8 will be, of every 10, 8 will be a continuation and 2 will be new.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Let me see. I have another thing here that I can bring. Okay, so I have 2019 data. Okay, so this is all I have found. It's 26 million prescriptions of antipsychotics covering quetiapine, Abilify, Risperdal, and Olanzapine were issued to patients. We have the number of patients for each medication, so we could actually play a little bit with it, but we're not going to do today. Because, for example, if you have, let's say, 1 million prescriptions, or let's say 12 million prescriptions for 1 million patients, and then of a given medication, and then you have 24 million prescriptions for 1 million patients, you have a 2-to-1 ratio. That tells you there's more compliance or continuity of medication.
Right.
And I actually went there. And of course, the compliance is higher for addictive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to sweat over that information. But so we have stimulants that were prescribed for more than 8 million people. Antidepressants were prescribed for 44 million people. Benzos, 9 million people. And we could play with it, but we're not going there.
Yeah, those are all very scary numbers. But where are you trying to get here?
So no, the point is to say that there is a polypharmacy. I was just and I have more stuff. I just didn't have it at hand. Sorry for that. So but the point is to say that polypharmacy became a thing, right? Let me see. Okay, so Okay, there's this research saying that 13 to 90%, oh, depends on the population. That's the problem. So some populations you're going to find polypharmacy in 90% of the studied population, right? Mm-hmm. So and there are four types of polypharmacy. You have augmentation strategies, which, you know, we covered previously. Augmentation, for example, maybe our first podcast was about antipsychotic augmentation for MDD.
It was, actually.
Yeah, good. My memory. and you know, to some extent, that's justifiable. But there's a lot of augmentation strategies that are redundant, and why not to say antagonistic? Like, for example, when you increase the when you have a medication that increases the availability of a given neurotransmitter, given at the same time with a medication that blocks the receptor of that neurotransmitter. But we don't have to go there. Mm. And but there's like the concept of polypharmacy. It's just more than just, you know, having a lot of meds, but overall, if you have four medications addressing the same thing, we'd call that polypharmacy, which four is already a pretty high number considering the kind of side effects we face here.
Yeah.
So the point of my argument was to show that we prescribe a lot. There's a lot of medications, and people taking medications, we have people that take nothing, and then we have people that take a lot.
So you could just have said that people are taking too much stuff that is bad for them?
Yeah, but I was trying to be more convincing. but let me try. All right. Okay, so people are taking too much stuff and it's bad for them. I guess you're right. Meaning, you know, regarding the fact that I don't need to make any efforts. I mean, if our listener is an NP,
right,
either in her practicum, she's shadowing or following someone in clinical practice out there, or if the NP is already working, again, sorry for my friend Robinson, I always refer to NPs as she, they're already seeing, they're inheriting cases where patients mm-hmm. are coming with 7, 8 medications, you know, two of each kind of stuff. And so, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be putting so much effort into making a case that there's a polypharmacy out there.
I see. And I assume that's where the prescribing enters, right?
Right. So because it's not as simple as, you know, let's stop everything that is not working and that makes no sense. You know, the prescribing is this concept that deserves some attention, some writing maybe, because for example, psychoanalysis treats, so patients get attached to their medications, right? In psychoanalysis, it's treated in terms of a transference to the medication. If anyone wants to read about it, I would recommend Glenn Gabbard. Mm-hmm. Discontinuing medications can easily generate a lot of anxiety for patients. So as a result, you know, some patients will give a lot of thought to it. One first step will be to assess how the patient is, right? If the patient is amazing, well, the task is harder. You would say, why change something if the patient is doing amazing? Well, because we have to consider that some meds may have late side effects, and we pretty much know the most concerning ones, like addictive stuff, benzos, or anticholinergic meds that are associated with a very high risk of developing dementia. Mm-hmm. So those guys would deserve attention no matter what, you know, even if the patient is doing beautifully, because we're not in the business of hurting folks. Of course, there's many philosophical considerations here, and it's not an easy topic by any means. But picture this, you're taking 3 meds for high blood pressure, and one of them for high cholesterol, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go to see your PCP, and he tells you, we just found out that one of your meds causes dementia or whatever. You go like, oh boy, thank you for letting me know, right? Thank you for keeping up with the research, and let's get rid of this stuff. you don't believe you know better than your doctor, yeah. Right? You gotta say, no, but that's the one that really helps me, right? My blood pressure, whatever. you're not gonna do that. Now, you picture this in psychiatry. Whatever you say, the patient may have a different perception. And once we are talking about the way you feel, you'll hear a lot of, but this medication makes me feel good. You know, and so does cocaine and alcohol, but you don't prescribe those. We used to.
mm-hmm.
You know, cocaine and alcohol were prescription medications. Actually, I heard recently about a a brewery, this distillery.
Mm.
A distillery that survived the prohibition because they managed to get a medical license and claim that the alcohol is being prescribed for medical purposes.
Oh, my God.
Well,
for real?
It's not that different of what we do now. Look what happened to marijuana.
So you're just basically bartenders? Is that what you're telling me?
That happened, man. And it's a distillery that survived the prohibition, not making freaking root beer, which is disgusting. I guess that's not a political take. I hate root beer. it tastes like
root beer.
No, it tastes like something we used to put in, you know, when you get hurt. It's like a freaking pain medication, topical pain medication. That's the worst. So, okay, so back to the topic. So where did I stop? All right. Was talking about... okay, so yeah, because of the patient's perception. So you're going to look to the patients and say, well, let's stop this thing. And he goes, oh, but that makes me feel good. That's not really... We don't go for feel good. You know, psychiatry is not the feel good. Unfortunately, psychiatry is becoming the do not feel medicine. But we definitely are not the feel good. So every time a patient, you know, comes and says, oh, I had anxiety, I'm already taking 4 or 5 medications, right? I had a bout of anxiety. God forbid, right? Not under my watch. Our effort will always be, and of course, I'm hoping I'm being sarcastic enough, that there's a lot of effort to prevent anything of being felt. Mm-hmm. So we're going to add more stuff on your brain. We're going to cause more cognitive impairment. Hopefully we're going to numb a little bit of what you feel. You know, and try to make you as dull as a freaking center table.
So how is it supposed to be done then?
Okay, so obviously this trend with polypharmacy did not go, and we don't have to explore why polypharmacy happened. I think it's multifactorial. One of them is the persistence of human suffering. The other one is the fallacy that we can free people from suffering, allied with commercial bias.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. But it's not as simple as, you know, just look at your patient and say, okay, buddy, you're taking this and this without clear or proper indication, so let's stop those. Because there are many reasons, you know, that's not so simple. And one of them is our medications are awfully non-specific when it comes to effects. Like antidepressants help anxiety, and depressive besides depressive syndromes. If you remember, there's a lot of overlap between the diagnosis. Antipsychotics also act as mood stabilizers, anti-manic, mm-hmm. also even antidepressants. Now, stimulants via a small improvement of attention can improve anxiety, especially for folks that are feeling overwhelmed by, you know, multiple environmental demands. And we already discussed the concerns in that regard and, you know, the overlap between generalized anxiety disorder and ADHD. And also some, I guess, we spoke about concerns regarding excessive use of stimulants. So what does that mean? It means that the patient may be having significant anxiety improved with antipsychotics.
Mm-hmm.
The class of antipsychotics, now it's called antipsychotics, and some people are talking about, you know, reviewing that name as well and call it dopamine blockers or something, which I absolutely don't care about. But before, antipsychotics were called major tranquilizers, because if you're freaking out, we're going to tranquilize you. Right, and we see the word being used usually in old movies, right? Give him a tranquilizer, right? Took a tranquilizer. So despite that, you know, despite the fact that medications are not that specific, patients may have some attachment to the medication regimen, or even a fair awareness of the fact that they may have withdrawal symptoms if they're not taking it so frequently as it happens with benzodiazepines. So the first recommended step on the prescribing is usually to explore the patient's perceptions of the medications, what they believe made a difference. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I think this medication didn't change anything for me. I've been taking for 6 months, but my previous doctor insisted.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's going to say, oh, this medication made all the difference for me. So you got to know where you're walking, right? Second, as you may find a patient who was misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder because the patient has daily mood swings or struggles with significant irritability or any other partial view of the bipolar disorder,
mm-hmm.
And or any other, you know, and he's on some polluted medication regimen, but he perceives the medication as super helpful. You know, then you want to sort of inform the patient regarding the side effects and see if the patient believes the benefits outweigh the risks, right? Because ideally, you want the patient on board with the whole thing. And then finally, you're going to choose a medication to be taper, you know, plan the taper. And then one of the last steps will be consider the right time to do so. For example, here in New England, you know, freaking winter gets everybody kind of bummed out and depressed. Mm-hmm. Or Christmas time and New Year's, you know, there's a peak of suicide attempts during Christmas. And that's true for Latin America as well. So let's say, or the patient is about to start a new job and that kind of stuff. That's not the time to rock the boat.
Right.
You know, and meanwhile, you go selling the idea of, oh, hey, you know, this has this side effects, has that side effect, may prevent you of improving. You're going to college. You don't need to be an antipsychotic. It makes you dumb as hell, you know, things like that. So then, and the other thing finally, I wouldn't say finally, but as you go through the process, is to be prepared to stop and rethink the taper. At times, because if you have a patient taking like four or five medications, doesn't matter, you don't really know what is doing what, neither does the patient. Mm-hmm. They have no clue. So as you're changing things very slowly and carefully, you can see a decline in his presentation. Then you say, oops, right? You got to go back to it. But at the end of the day, it's justifiable because you're minimizing side effects and futile treatments and things like that.
Right.
And I think one thing that it matters is that, you know, at the end of the day, it's your license. You went through training. You spent years learning and reading. And, you know, now you're listening to this freaking podcast instead of listening to Led Zeppelin when you drive to work or whatever. So you are a mental health, you know, the listener is a mental health provider, not a grocery store. So mm-hmm. if you see a therapy that makes no sense, you got to do something about it because likelihood is it can hurt the patient.
Well, that's what we're trying to do here, right? We're trying to do something about it, something about the way the psychiatry is going on, right?
Yeah, and I hope it's coming across as a humble attempt because, you know, it's hard to be sure about anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe most of our listeners that are working in, you know, they're seeing psychiatry and the way psychiatry has been practiced. and they can tell something's a little bit off. And if they, you know, again, you know, if the listener has figured what we're trying to do, our efforts to match philosophy, data, and common sense. And again, it's hard to be sure of any of these things, you know, but if you have figured that we're trying to do a good thing and hurt people less with side effects, please share this podcast with the people you know in the field and email us. Go to our website, New England PMI.
Yes, we do have a website that you can send us a message. And we have previous episodes of this podcast right there available for you to listen to them as
beautiful.
Well.
We're also on Spotify, right?
We are, sir.
Pretty cool.
Spotify, Apple Music, all of those like softwares for podcasts. But yeah, or also suggest new topics. So don't hesitate to send us a message. Dr. Nadi, again, I do appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us, and we hope to get together again next week.
We'll be there. Thank you.
This podcast was offered by anypmi.org.